Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Scott Kirzner.
He's the new man in my life. The car man at my Citgo station.
There's a car man for every woman at Citgo.
It's a nice place to visit.
That's a 1972 TV spot for Citgo. It aired just a few years after the company put up a giant neon sign in Kenmore Square. Last month, the Boston Landmarks Commission granted preliminary landmark status to the sign, now lit by energy-efficient LEDs. The commission's move follows Boston University's announcement in January that it would sell the building underneath the iconic sign. So far, no buyer has been announced, but the process has gotten some Bostonians talking about the sign's uncertain future and its meaning to the city. Is this just an ad for an oil company, or is it, as Robert Campbell, the Boston Globe's architecture critic, once wrote, Boston's Big Ben? Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Greg Gaylor, executive director of the Boston Preservation Alliance, which started a citywide petition to grant the sign landmark status. Greg, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
And with us in the studio is Alex Green, research associate at Harvard Business School and contributing writer for WBUR's Ideas and Opinions page, Cognoscenti. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. Does the Citgo sign deserve landmark status? Do you have nostalgic feelings for it, or do you think it represents our love affair with oil and maybe just should be taken down? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Greg, let's start with you. What do you think should happen to the sign when the BU building changes hands, even if we have a new owner who says that, you know, we're willing to keep the sign for now?
Well, we think there should be a commitment to keep the sign long term in the city. It's really become an icon of Boston, not just locally, but nationally, in fact, internationally. And I think it's transcended its origin as a representation of an oil company to something else. And it's really a character defining piece of the city.
And who would be able to make the sign a landmark? And, you know, have we done this for other commercial kind of advertising signs in Boston?
There is not a lot of precedent to this. There is the Boston Wharf Company sign over at Fort Point. That's part of that historic district, so that is protected. So there is some level of precedent. And this would be a move by the Landmarks Commission to continue the process that they started back in July.
Alex, you've written a little bit about the complicated history of the Citgo sign. Tell us about when it was built and why.
Well, the Citgo sign first came up as a much less iconic sign in the 1940s, and then it was replaced in 1967 as the sign that we know today. And it has really been a flashpoint, actually, ever since then across the city. You've seen it contested from the oil crisis in the 70s all the way up through protests by a Boston city councilor against the fact that Citgo was owned by Venezuela in the 2000s, right up until now. So this is actually not an uncommon thing for the Citgo sign to be a point of contest in the city of Boston.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how many articles have written about it over the years. There was this one point, Alex, I know if you want to talk about this, where it seems like in 1982, the company actually was about to take it down. They had workers on the roof of the building. They were getting ready to dismantle it.
And people surrounded it, right? And people said, you can't do this. And I think that's, you know, think of that. At that point, it was a much younger sort of addition to the city. And even then, it moved people to step in and say, this is something special. And this is something that we associate with the city of Boston.
Greg, why didn't it get landmarked back then, given that we've been talking about landmark status for, you know, what, 30 years now?
Well, you know, there are a number of many sites in the city that are not landmarked that probably should be and deserve protection, but just the challenges of the logistics of making that happen. It was a different time back then. Citgo was not in favor. My guess is there were probably some discussions between John Silber, president of BU at the time, and the administration, and it just didn't sort of move forward. But I think it's a different time, and I think it's coming at a time when we're seeing, as the Boston Preservation Alliance, looking at the historic character of the city throughout Boston and its neighborhoods, that there's a lot of change and people are starting to push back. And there was actually an article in Boston Magazine where the author said that the Citgo sign was a proxy war for Boston's soul. And I think that's an interesting indicator. You know, for us, we're seeing this throughout the city. The Citgo sign just happens to be pretty large and prominent, so everyone knows it.
A proxy war for Boston's soul in what way? What do you think
they
meant?
Well, that we're losing character. You know, development and growth is important, and as an organization, we support that, but it's a balancing act. And we're seeing in neighborhoods like South Boston and Chinatown and now in the Ladder Blocks district in downtown, changes in development to the point where we're wondering if we're going to start to lose those unique aspects of the city that make Boston so special and what make Boston people come to Boston and invest here.
That's Greg Gaylor, Executive Director of the Boston Preservation Alliance. Listeners, we'd love to hear your feelings about the Sitco sign. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can also send a tweet to @RadioBoston. We've got Alex on the line calling in from Sudbury. Alex, go ahead.
I just want to say that I've grown up in Boston. I'm 30 years old. To me, the sign is just part of the skyline. It's something that I like seeing in the city. I think what you just said, it's unique, which I agree with. And I also associate it with Fenway Park. Every time I'm at the ballpark or driving to the ballpark, I can see it. And it's something I enjoy seeing in the city.
Thanks for calling in, Alex. Our other Alex in the studio, Alex Green of Harvard Business School, what's your take on that? I mean, I was at Fenway recently, and I kind of was looking at all the ads in the park, and those change from season to season, and then you see the Sitco sign beyond the park, which is kind of this constant that never changes.
Yeah, how could you not? And I think you look at the whole square around Fenway Park, and so many people go there. So many of us associate Boston with that immediate area. Look how much that's changed in just the recent few years. And I think that really goes to the point of how much the city is changing. And this is this stalwart symbol of Boston along the skyline. So I couldn't agree more with the caller.
Well, Greg, let me play devil's advocate for a minute. And when I came to Boston, the Sitco sign was there. It was the most visible piece of Kenmore Square. But Kenmore Square at that point included, you know, the Rat and a couple greasy pizza shops and the Narcissus nightclub. And all of those things are gone today. Kenmore Square looks more like a connection, an adjunct to Back Bay. So why would it be so terrible to get rid of the Sitco sign too and maybe donate it to a museum where people would still be allowed to look at it when they dropped by?
Well, I think on the latter point, the reality is of a 60-foot by 60-foot sign is not going to make it into a museum. We have another piece that we're trying to find a home for that's large as well, and that's, you know, logistically that's a real challenge. You know, as far as your other point, I think, you know, it's great and important that neighborhoods change and evolve, and I'm always telling people, look, the city has always evolved, will continue to evolve, and to pretend it doesn't and try to stop everything doesn't make sense, and that's not what we're about. We're not about freezing the city in time, and in fact, landmarking doesn't prevent change. It just requires review and oversight in a public process when change occurs. And I think it's important that we keep some of these character-defining features. I mean, the Sitco sign is also important that it's really a great example of pop art and advertising art that we've really gotten away from, and many people have written about that. And, you know, we saw in the comments in our online petition, we got over 5,000 people signing that to support the landmarking, you know, talking about how it's literally a beacon and a way to navigate. So there's many aspects to the Sitco sign that I think are important. And I think, yes, the city and neighborhoods should change, and Kenmore Square has changed a lot. But at what point do we say, you know, we're going too far?
So, Alex, you've written a little bit critically about the Sitco sign as sort of a representation of car culture, and it was erected at a time when lots of highways and the Mass Pike were being built in Boston, and maybe our addiction to oil. Does that mean? But that doesn't sound like it means you want to see it go away.
Not at all. I mean, I think that the best aspects of history are those that challenge us and aren't perfect. I think perfect history becomes fairy tales, you know, and we're very good in this city at preserving and protecting the deep history of the place. It's a little harder up close when it's a shorter history, but the Sitco sign is really associated with it. You know, the year that it was replaced and became what we see today was the same year that the last bit of the Mass Pike sort of connected into the central artery in Boston. And those highways, imagine this city without Starro Drive, without the central artery, without the Mass Pike. Those transform this from being a neighborhood city, what Greg's been talking about, to being a car and suburban metropolis. And it is as much a monument to that sort of imperfect car culture as anything else.
You got me thinking about it. I think there's one pillar that's still standing maybe near the end of Quincy Market of the central artery, one of the green I-beams that's there as kind of a memory of that. Let's take a few more callers. Elizabeth is calling in from Cambridge. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate this conversation. I just want to give a little bit of more like lyrical anecdotal I grew up here, and my twin brother lives in Tanzania. He visited recently with his three kids, who are 8 and 10 and 12, and we took them for the first time to Fenway Park. And they did all this research on Fenway Park and on the Sitco sign and the kind of history of Boston. And so in that sense, it feels like a really historical, contextual point to keep the Sitco sign in on our cityscape. And as well, my mother's a hospice chaplain, and she was bedside with the man who, as he was dying, who single-handedly changed the light bulbs in the Sitco sign for like 35 years. So in our family, it's a huge point of a place of being in Boston.
Elizabeth, those are both great stories. I want to go to another caller. Patty is calling in from Duxbury. Patty, what's on your mind? Patty, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's a much lighter comment than you all have been discussing, but I can't help but every time I think or see of the Sitco sign, I think of Manny Ramirez, and his comment was, it always meant to him, see it go.
See it go, like sounding out the sea there.
Yeah, and that meant, you know, he was going to hit a home run. So see it go, man.
All right, Patty, thanks for the call. Let's see. Rather than go to another caller, let me ask Greg. There are some examples. When I think about landmarking things in Boston, I often think about historic houses or places where Revolutionary War battles happened. But I did notice that in New York City, there's a Pepsi sign. You mentioned that just got landmarked earlier this year. There's the Boston Wharf Company sign in Fort Point Channel. But do people sometimes feel more conflicted about preserving advertisements than preserving a battlefield or a house?
I think there may be a little bit of a confliction. But look, I think we've come to realize that history is rich in its diversity. In terms of the time span it covers and the topics that it covers. And, you know, Boston's history isn't just a homogeneous positive story of the Revolutionary War. And we have many landmarks that come more to the modern period, including the Christian Science Center, which is a 1960s development. The mid-century modern buildings often have people conflicted themselves. And I think as far as your point earlier about the oil history, I mean, we learned from our mistakes and we learned from the evolution of the city. And I think, you know, if the Sitco sign hopefully is landmarked and years hence people will look back and think about global warming and our interesting connection with oil companies in the past. So I think that's all part of the story, and that's what makes history interesting. That's why people like us pursued a career in history.
Greg, I was discussing with someone earlier today the possibility that whoever buys the building underneath the Sitco sign may want to add a few stories to it. And even if they kept the Sitco sign, then you're talking about a Sitco sign that's potentially 2, 3, 4 stories taller, maybe even a little bit more prominent on the skyline. And I just wonder if you have thoughts. I mean, that seems like that could ignite a whole different debate when you say, okay, it can be seen, you know, from the North End and from the back of Beacon Hill and lots of other parts of the city.
Well, I think that's part of the challenge, and that might have been part of the challenge that stymied the landmarking in the past. And that's something that the Landmarks Commission, as they kind of work through their process towards their standards and guidelines, well, each landmark has its own unique standards and guidelines that will clearly be discussed. And like I said, landmarking something doesn't mean it can't change at all. The question is, you know, what level of minor changes of allowed that allows the character-defining feature of the sign. So I think one of the wonderful things about the Sitco sign that we haven't touched on is its scale. It's 60 feet by 60 feet. It's big. As we've talked about, you can see it from so many different parts of the city. But also, you know, when you come up from the T at Kenmore Square, I remember as a kid coming to a, you know, Red Sox game, there it is, big and strong and powerful. But it's not oppressive and looming. And then as you sort of recede to the ballpark, it still remains big. But I think that relationship that people have with the sign is important. So, you know, as the site evolves and, you know, is there an opportunity to raise it a few feet? Are there structural issues with doing that? I think that's all needs to be part of the discussion. So, you know, we're looking forward to being part of that dialogue. But, you know, we were just frustrated that BU is selling the buildings without a clear commitment to make sure the sign stays and just kind of leaving the door open for anything.
Let's hear from another caller. We have Adam calling from Belmont. Adam, go ahead.
Hi, I just want to bring it back to just the Red Sox culture and the Boston culture. SportsCenter is running an ad right now with David Ortiz in it, and in the ad, he's wearing a shirt that has a Sitco sign on it, and I think that says a lot because, I mean, he's an iconic member of the Red Sox, but having that shirt on should have, it doesn't even need the words Boston on it because we all know what it represents and what it means.
That's a great point. I mean, it's hard to imagine how much free advertising and free branding the company is getting from T-shirts and bumper stickers and everything. Let's take another caller. We have Joan calling us from Brighton. Joan, go ahead.
Hi. Two real quick things. One of them is that every kid who goes to the planetarium sees the Sitco sign in their skyline view they have around the city when you can stand. And, you know, they haven't started the program yet, and that's very cool because they all know what that is, even though they don't know it's an oil company. And the other thing is that I give an eye contest to my marketing communications people at the beginning of the classes. No names, just the logos. And they're very, very hard, except for one, and that's the Sitco logo. And they all feel really comfortable that they got that.
So it's got the highest brand recognition when you quiz them on logos.
Yep. I mean, Tide is good, but the Sitco sign is wonderful.
Greg, real quickly, tell us about the next steps in getting definitive landmark status or not for the Sitco sign. When will we know more?
Well, like I said, the Landmarks Commission accepted it, so it's now a pending landmark. So that means at this point, if anyone purchases the building, they could go through a voluntary accelerated design review, which would begin a process to have some discussion. But in the meantime, the Landmarks Commission will be working on these guidelines and criteria and doing a study report on the full history of the sign so we understand it completely. It'll come back to the Landmarks Commission hopefully in the early fall, and they will vote again, hopefully, to pursue the landmark. Then it needs to go to the mayor and city council. And we've already had two city councilors who sent letters to the Landmarks Commission supportive on the first step. So we're very optimistic. I just can't imagine anyone wants the Sitco sign to go away under their watch.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one final caller here. Christina calling in from Jamaica Plain. Christina, can you be brief here?
Yes. I just wanted to say that regardless of how much people love the sign and how much it means for them, people need to really understand the history behind it and what it means for 30 million Venezuelans that are completely devastated in a country that is sinking with the worst economic crisis, the worst social crisis, and the worst political crisis ever. Children dying from lack of medicine because of what the government of Venezuela is doing, and that sign, what represents to Venezuelans, is a government that has failed us for 15 years with social policies that have not worked and with corruption and stealing from the people and stealing from basically destroying an entire economy, an entire society, and people just literally are dying in hospitals, children dying in hospitals from all the horrible policies that this government has done.
Yes.
And this is straight what the Sitco sign means for us.
Christina, thank you for bringing that up. Greg Gaylor is Executive Director of the Boston Preservation Alliance. Thank you for joining us, Greg.
Thank you for having us anytime.
Alex Green is a contributing writer for WBUR's Ideas and Opinions page, Cognoscenti. You can find a link to his piece about the Sitco sign on radioboston.org. Thanks to you as well, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Scott Kirshner. This is Radio Boston.